She's a genius. That's cool. She prepped with Hannah at Nightingale, and she knew me from Summers, and Lynn was her freshman roommate. She's like the connector. I laugh and you blush. What? You just used prepped as a verb. Fuck off. That's a demerit, young lady. And what happens when I get another? You say, and I'm this close to throwing you against the wall, and you're this close to grabbing me. The closer we get to the party, the more you want to slap the red emergency button and go at it right here, right now. I should kiss you, but we're almost to the floor marked P for penthouse. You move your purse to your other shoulder. You want me. I graze the palm of my left hand over the small of your back, and you almost whinny. Your fingertips brush my leg as the elevator shimmies. I lower my hand slowly. You anticipate. You dangle your fingers, ready. And when my hand finally nears yours, you gasp, lightly, as you open your fingers and latch onto mine. We are holding hands, and your sweat is mixing into mine. Wow. It's time to kiss, and I want to kiss. But the doors open up, and we're here. And I'm speechless. Are we on the set of Hannah and Her Sisters? Desire for you is mixed up with jealousy of all this, and people know your name, but not mine. Your world is bigger than my world, and you hug brown people, and some of them have instruments. Are you kidding with a fucking drum circle like it's 1995? They're covering Jane Says and singing as if they know about lust and weakness. You squeeze my hand. Joe, you say, this is Peach. Yes, it is. She's even taller than I expected, with enormous frizzy hair swept into a tornado above her head. She makes you look too little, and you make her look too big. You're from two different planets, and you're not meant to be standing together. She claps as if she's meeting a five-year-old, and I don't like it when girls are taller than me. Hello, Joseph, she says, over-enunciating. I am Peach, and this is my home. Nice to meet you, I say. She looks me up and down. Cunt. I love you already for not being pretentious, she says. And thank you for not bringing any wine or anything. This girl is family to me. No gifts allowed. You are, of course, aghast. Oh my God, Peach, I completely flaked. She looks down on you, literally. Sweetie, I just said I love it. And besides, the last thing we need is more cheap wine. You are acting like you committed a felony, and she looks at me like I'm the delivery guy waiting for a tip. I'm stealing our girl for 2 minutes, Joseph. You allow her to steal you, and I really must look like the fucking delivery guy as I stand here, not knowing anyone, not being known. No girls are coming on to me, and maybe I don't look good in here. The only certainty is that I hate this Peach as much as I knew I would, and she hates me right back. She knows how to work you, Beck. You are apologizing for no wine, for not bringing Lynn and Hannah, for not taking better care of your purse, and she is forgiving, stroking your back, telling you not to worry. I'm invisible to you in her presence, just like everyone else. Peach is in the way. I look around, but nobody wants to say hi to me. It's like they can smell the public school on me. A skinny Indian chick mad dogs me before she nosedives into a line of Adderall or Coke, and I get out my phone and send a tweet from Benji. Everything in moderation, especially moderation. Hashtag home soda. Hashtag go Bulldogs. Hashtag smoke crack every day. I look up this address on Zillow. This place is worth $24 million. And I find an article about the decor in a fucking society blog. Peach's mother looks even meaner and taller than Peach, and who knows? Maybe it's tough to come into this world and crawl on rugs that cost $100,000. Peach learned piano on a mint black Steinway and went to the planetarium whenever she wanted. Of course she takes the glories of the Upper West Side for granted. Of course she loves you for fawning over Prada. I see a hand-carved credenza and I move in for a closer look. It's an excellent piece. One of a kind. One door has a Jewish star, and one door has a cross. And maybe I have a shot in this scene. Peach is like me, half Jewish and half Catholic. I grew up with no religion, and she had all religion. She celebrates everything, and I celebrate nothing, and you've come back to me with her. Isn't this piece cool? You say, and you lean against the credenza. It's great, I agree. You know, Peach, I'm also Jewish and Catholic. Oh, Joseph. She's correcting me, I can feel it. I'm not Catholic. I'm Methodist, but you're sweet. That's cool, I say, and I want to go home. I also want to tell her I'm Joe, not Joseph, bastard spawn of Alma Goldberg and Ronnie Passero. You fake a cough, and you look from me to her and back again, and your voice is high. You guys are also both New Yorkers. Peach speaks slowly, like I'm ESL. Which borough are you from? Cunt. Bed-Stuy? I read that people are starting to move there, she says. I hope the gentrification doesn't destroy all the local color. The only reason I do not bash her head in is that you seem so nervous about us meeting that you don't notice her dissing me. I didn't ask her what she does for a living, but for some reason she is talking about her job. I'm an architect, she says. I design buildings. I know what a fucking architect is, and nobody is ever an architect in real life, only in movies. And did you tell her I am dumb? I try to stay afloat. That's cool. No, what's cool is the fact that you didn't go to college, she gushes. I'm such a follower. My parents went to Brown, so I went to Brown. I smile. My parents didn't go to Brown, so I didn't go to Brown. She looks at you. He's funny, Beck. No wonder you're so into him. You smile. You blush. I'm okay. He's pretty good, yep. She raves about how amazing it is that I eschewed formal education entirely. It is not a compliment, but I thank her anyway. She tightens the scarf around her neck and chastises you for lighting a cigarette as some asshole packs a bong a foot away. She is done with me for now, and she asks if you've heard from Lynn and Khanna. You apologize. You're nervous about what she thinks of you. And I wish I could pull you out of here and take you to my burrow. She's a hypocrite. A fucking nightmare of a person. Worse than I imagined. You are soft. She is hard, in skin-tight red skinny jeans you would never wear. She's anorexic and slightly tattooed with thick frayed hair and a big red blowjob mouth and a joker smile and long, spindly hairy arms that end in sharp, unpainted nails bitten to the quick. You ooze joy, and she is an open wound, shrill and wan, unfucked and unloved. She clearly wants you to herself, and I don't want to make life difficult for you, so I interject. Sorry, girls, is there a bathroom nearby? You point me toward the bathroom, and I flee. No wonder Lynn and Khanna didn't come. If she were a dog, shooting her would be the humane thing to do. But I can't very well shoot her. What I can do is walk around to find the library I saw in the blog. I gasp when I turn on the lights in the library. It's that fucking great. The Salinger family doesn't fuck around, and I reach for a first edition of Saul Bellow's second novel, The Victim. The poor Bellow's dust jacket is torn. Peach's parents know how to buy books and make babies, but they clearly aren't very good at caring for their purchases and their products. Brown people are singing Hey Jude again. How original. And I miss you. I return the broken Bellow to its home, and you and Peach walk into the library. I freeze. I hope I'm not in trouble. We figured we'd find you here, Peach laughs, as if you two are the we and I am just me. I would let you borrow a book, but my parents are so possessive of their babies. I'm all right, I say, and I never asked to borrow a fucking book. But thanks. You link your arm through mine, and it feels good, and you sigh. Isn't this amazing, Joe? Yeah, I say. You could spend a year in here. Peach again. Sometimes I feel like college ruined reading for me, you know? I do know, you say, and your arm is not linked through mine anymore. Joe, I bet you've read more books in this room than me. Peach approves. A good salesman has to know his product, right? I hate Peach more than Sarah. She called me a salesman, and in the living room, the brown people applaud themselves for knowing the words to Hey Jude, as if it's not one of the most famous songs in the world. Peach sneezes and pulls a handkerchief out of her pocket. She's probably allergic to me, and you leave me and run to her lovingly. Do you have a cold? I bet you're reacting to the dust in here, I say. You're probably not used to it. Good point, you say, and Peach is silenced, temporarily, as you lead us back to the party. I've never needed a drink so badly in my life, and we pass the brown people as they maul sweet Virginia. You get a text from Hana. She's not coming. Peach huffs. You know, if I were Hana, I might be embarrassed to show my face here, too. Is there any guy in this house that she didn't sleep with at school? Pardon my crassness, Joseph. I hate that I am so grateful to be acknowledged, and you smile at me. Hooray! And Peach pulls us both into the dining room to greet some guests. It's more high ceilings and high brown people holding court and kicking back at the longest table I've ever seen in my life. They're blowing lines off mismatched candy-colored plates, and the booze, there's tons of it. What's your poison, Joe? Peach wants to know. Beer? Vodka, I answer, and I smile, but she doesn't. Rocks? If they're little ones, I say. She looks at me, and then at you, and then at me, and she guffaws. Excuse me? Crushed ice does better with vodka than cubes. I learned that from Benji. And Peach crosses her arms, and you're fumbling in your purse for something to say, for a tunnel away from me, and I gotta fix this and get rid of her, and I try. Whatever ice you got will work. That's awfully kind of you, Joseph. Sweetness, what do you want? Vodka soda? Nice and easy, says Peach, and she's gone. Some dude appears with a bag of Coke, and there's clapping as more brown people flood the dining room. I feel like Ben Stiller in Greenberg, misplaced in the bad way. Too many guys have slept with you. I know, because they look past you. You're a restaurant that's easy to get into, and all of these people talk, constantly. Remember that spring break in Turks? You have to listen to Tom Waits when you're sober. Remember spring weekend when you got locked out of Pembroke? You have to listen to Tom Waits when you're stoned. Remember that class we took, that graveyard class, and we took that field trip and we had those mushrooms? You have to come to Turks with us. Everyone is going. I don't speak the language, and it's a relief to get a drink. Peach simpers. So, Joseph, are the rocks small enough for you? Yeah, I was just playing. She moves us into the kitchen, and it's the biggest kitchen I've ever been in, and I'm trying so hard not to look around like it's the biggest kitchen I've ever been in. It's like the kitchen in that movie where evil rich Michael Douglas tries to have Gwyneth Paltrow murdered because she falls for a poor artist. Everything is stainless steel or marble, and the island in the center is the size of a small car. I can't remember if the poor guy gets Gwyneth in the end of the movie, and it feels like it matters a lot right now. I can't seem to find a place to put my eyes. I'm either staring at Peach, which is no good, or staring at you, which is worse. A CD juts out from under the Times Book Review. It's the soundtrack to Hannah and Her Sisters. Thank God. Nice tunes, Peaches, I say. I can't control the tone of my voice, not in a room this noisy, this smelly, and she looks at me like I just asked her for spare change. Peach, she says. Peach, you say, and sometimes I understand why Mr. Mooney gave up on women. Sorry. So you're a big fan, Joseph? I pick up her fucking CD. This is one of my favorite movies. It's his best movie. Peach ignores my proclamation in favor of a brown girl she hasn't seen in forever. It's not fun to share you with all these people, and you're drinking really fast, too fast. Do you like me? Do you want me to be more like those flattened cokeheads in the dining room with the Arcade Fire t-shirts and high cheekbones? Is that what you want? God, I hope not, and I am holding the Hannah CD so hard that it cracks. I put it down. Peach picks it up. You smile at me, and you do like me, and I am going nuts. I love Hannah too, Joseph, Peach sighs. I've seen it 1,000 times. I've seen it 1,000,000 times, I say, and why am I competing? She says I win, and she looks at you like she approves. You're happy to see that rich kids and poor kids can get along after all, and I almost want to spit in Peach's pointed face to prove a fucking point. She could have been nice to me from the get-go. She didn't have to put you through all this anxiety, but she still wants to talk about Hannah. Best Woody Allen movie ever, she says, scene for scene. Song for song, I say, and I toss the CD on the counter. Peach moves it like I'm inherently dangerous, and we're back to square one, and you're touching my arm again. What's your favorite scene, Joe? Oh, the end. You know when Diane Weiss tells him she's pregnant, I say? I'm a romantic, and I'll own up to that all day long. I like you, Tipsy, and gazing at me. Peach is disgusted. You're kidding, right? She laughs at me, and you're not looking up at me anymore. She's acid, this Peach. There's no fuzzy warmth unless you count the tiny little hairs all over her narrow body. Joseph, you can't be serious. Very much so. I love that shot of them in the mirror. The way they kiss when she tells him she's pregnant. But Peach is poking at the newly cracked jewel case of the CD with her starved fingers and shaking her head. You touch me in the bad way, like you want me to stop. And the Brown Singers know the words to My Sweet Lord, and someone found a fucking tambourine, and somewhere in my head, I remember that George Harrison's son went to Brown, and I hate knowing that at this particular moment. Well, Joseph, it's funny you mention that scene, because, you know, that's the one scene that Woody didn't want in, she lectures. Woody. There's no way that's true. Actually, it is true. It's the truth. No offense, but I kind of doubt it. I think they let him do his thing, you know? My grandfather worked at the studio, and he told Woody he wanted a happier ending. And Woody, being Woody, objected, but my grandfather, well, he was the guy, you know? The guy. So your grandfather's not J.D. Salinger, I say, because fuck her. And she shoots you a look, and you sigh, and she's not done. Anyway, she says, it's funny that your favorite scene in the movie is the one scene that he didn't want. Peach, says Beck, do you have any club soda? There's a case of Home in the fridge, she says, smirking, eyeing me, knowing exactly what the fuck she's doing. I raise my glass. To your grandfather. She doesn't raise her glass. The Hollywood monster who slapped sappy, happy endings on every movie you ever saw and avoided his children like the plague and single-handedly ruined the tone of some of the most iconic pictures in America? No, no, Joseph. You don't want to toast that man. You practically crawled into the Sub-Zero, and I bet you're thinking about Benji, and it's not in the way that I'm thinking about Benji, and you emerge with your glass. Red now, you chose cranberry juice. You choose me. And at long last, you correct her. You tell her I am Joe, not Joseph. And I thank you, as I raise my glass even higher, because I can give her what she wants now that you've corrected her. Now that you've picked sides. To you, Peach, I say in the deferent voice I reserve for persnickety older ladies, for schooling me on my favorite movie. She looks at you. You shrug like, yeah, he's that good. And she looks at me. I sweeten the deal. In all seriousness, Peach, I could pick your brain for hours. I love Woody Allen. She doesn't sip after the toast and she sighs. Okay, that's one good thing about college. Staying up all night and talking about movies, you would have loved it, Joseph. Instead of punching her in the face, I raise my glass for another toast. She stares down into her asshole sangria and asks you if you told Hannah that some guy Leonard is here. You step away from me to hunt for your phone. You're sorry again, and Peach forgives, and this party is never going to end, ever. You were too tipsy to text, and you growl in frustration. Peach raises one eyebrow, and she probably learned how to do that the summer her parents undoubtedly shipped her off to Stage Door Manor acting camp, hoping that she might flower into Gwyneth Paltrow. The same summer she perfected the art of bulimia and learned how to insult people like me. And then I look at you, and what's this? You're cradling your phone in your hands and smiling. I have to know what has captivated you, and Peach doesn't exist anymore. Nobody does. When I stand behind you and look down into your phone, I see a clip from Hannah and her sisters, the part where Woody's character goes to a Marx Brothers movie. It was all worth it. And I put my hands on your shoulders. We watched the rest of the scene together, and God bless Groucho Marx. When we get into the elevator at the end of the night that threatens to never end, you don't wait until the doors are closed. Ever since I caught you watching my Hannah, You have wanted to be closer to me, and now you are. I haven't even pushed the button when you drop your purse to the floor. You pull my face to yours and hold me. You pause. You drive me crazy, and then, your lips were made for mine, Beck. You are the reason I have a mouth, a heart. You kiss me when people can still see us, when we can still hear Bobby Short. I'm in love again, and I love, love, love it. Because you made Peach play the soundtrack from Hannah and her sisters. Because you want to know what I know and hear what I like to hear. Your tongue tastes like cranberries, not like club soda. Not anymore, anyway. When the elevator doors close and we're alone, you start to pull away. But I pull your hair and bring your mouth to mine. I know how to leave you wanting more. And I do. Chapter 13. I fucked up. The day after our date, I left you a voicemail asking to take you to a movie at the Angelica. Fucking amateur. You responded with a text 2 hours later. Already saw it, actually, and still hungover, kind of frowny face. And have so much writing to do, but see you soon, smiley face. In truth, you hadn't seen the movie, and you weren't hungover, and you weren't writing, unless by writing you mean emailing your friends about Benji. Fucking Benji. I look at my phone, and it's been 15 hours and 2 long days since we kissed. You told Hannah and Lynn that you're not ready for me because you have Benji brain. I can't kill Benji until you kill Benji, and I try to stay calm. I spent 2 days selling books, minding Benji, and remembering our kiss. Our kiss. You described it to Lynn and Hannah. Joe is really intense. I don't know, he's a maybe. Anyway, do you guys think I should write to Benji? Your maybe hurt worse than Benji, and there was nothing maybe about our kiss. I win the case every time I go over it in my head. You like my hair. You said so in the cab. You grabbed onto me, Beck. You weren't drunk. You find me intense, and that's a compliment. It is. I try to be calm. I won't achieve definite status until you have the honor of receiving my cock. But this morning I woke up to this tweet from you. That day when you can't not go to IKEA anymore, hashtag procrastination nation, hashtag broken bed. I kicked one of my typewriters. How could you send hashtag broken bed into the world knowing that I would see it? Are you trying to drive me nuts? Hannah wrote to you right away. Broken bed, WTF. You wrote back, not broken, just old and creaky. I figure some dude is more likely to help me if it's broken, right? Would you want to help if I made you dinner or something? Hannah didn't respond. You emailed a few guys on Craigslist to assemble furniture for cash. Do you go to IKEA and bring stuff back to NYC, or do you only assemble stuff? Upon learning that assemblymen do not double as slaves, you reached out to me. Do you like IKEA? Hint, hint. It goes without saying that I don't like IKEA, but of course I wrote back. Love it, actually. Go there every day. Why? It's not romantic and it's a daylight date, but I understand that your attraction to me is so intense that you need to keep a safe distance. That's why you wrote back, want to get on the boat with me? There will be meatballs, smiley face. Meatballs is a sexless word, and the boat is actually a ferry that goes to IKEA. Furniture shopping is a thankless task, but you murmured I like you about 1,000 times in the cab after Peach's party, and those murmurings trump whatever bullshit you spew to your friends on Twitter. I wrote back, no meatballs required, but I'll get on a boat with you. So this afternoon, you and I will go to IKEA, where there will be no chance of us having sex. I know how you girls operate, and I know the 3-date rule and all that shit. But I also know for a fact that we have a bigger obstacle between us. Benji. After you invited me to IKEA, you emailed Lynn and Hannah and told them to look at Benji's Twitter. Scary, right? I'm worried about him, frowny face. I'm obviously not doing a good job with the Benji tweets. They're supposed to turn you off, but you still care, and Lynn and Hannah tell you to stop. Lynn. Beck, it's okay to get dumped. It happens. Hannah. I'm sure he's on a yacht in St. Bart's with some art whore telling her how worried he is about you. Honestly, B, you're starting to make me think that Peach is right. And it's awful to think that Peach is right, but you need to let him go. They're right. But you love hard, and it's my fault that you're jammed up like this, and I promise to do better with the tweets. You deserve to cut the cord with Benji, and you can't very well fall for me if you're worrying about him. I have a heart just like you, so I splurge. I gather some of Princess Benji's favorite things, a vegan burrito, a soy latte, a pint of fake ice cream, and the New York Observer. He responds well, grateful. And he's inhaling that burrito like an animal and mourning the loss of Lou Reed. He's the reason I did so many good things and so many bad things. What's your favorite song? They're all equally vital, Joe, he lectures. You can't break down an artist's impact on the culture by citing specific songs or lyrics. It isn't about favorites. It's about the value of his entire oeuvre. Typical. And I'm ready to send his last tweet as he licks the lid of the pint. He's perpetually ravenous. There's emptiness in him that can never be filled. Emptiness that dresses up well at prep school, where a lack of willpower is called creativity. I tune him out and tweet for him. Smoked it to the filter. Licked it to the bone. Hashtag got crack. Hashtag got meth. Hashtag ain't got nothing at all. Hashtag Lou Reed RIP. I hit tweet. It's too quiet. I look into the cage, and fuck me if Benji didn't get into his stash while I had my head buried in his phone. His packets are on the floor next to his card. I call out, Benji? Nothing. This isn't part of my plan. I walk up to the cage. I call again, but he doesn't move. There's powder on his upper lip, and drugs have never looked so unglamorous. I know he's been taking a line here and there, but I've ignored it all because I hate drugs. I have never done drugs. Is this my punishment for being drug-free? I wish I could take a picture and send it to you so that you could see what Benji boils down to, but I can't. Finally, he comes to, and I'm so relieved that he's alive that I could kill him, which feels cliched as all fuck, and I raise a fist. Okay, he says, and he shakes. Benji out. Kill Benji. Quit the dramatics, I say. I'm not in the mood. And I'm not. It's not like I enjoy having to put somebody to sleep, even when said somebody is so lacking in courage and imagination that he needs to fill himself up with drugs at the very moment when he should be fighting for his life. Did you kill me yet? Eat your fucking ice cream. It's not ice cream, he laughs. It's non-dairy. I roar, shut up and eat! He laughs, and it's called smack because I want to smack him with his arms flailing. He's licking the pint of not ice cream like the junkie he is. And this is what you love, Beck? He picks up the Observer and tries to tear it in half, but he's too fucked up and he staggers to his feet. Sit down, Benji. Did you kill me yet? He is a zombie and a cripple and he is talking again. Joe, my man, come on. You don't think it's funny? This girl stalks me for like 100 years and now here I sit, dead, because you're stalking her. Nobody's a stalker. Except you, Joe, he snips. You know, I have nothing to do in here but think, and I get it. You didn't happen upon her in the subway that night. And honestly, if you want her that bad, if you really, really don't want to believe me when I tell you that she's crazy, fine. Fine, he groans again. And it's typical of a guy like Benji to accuse you of being a stalker. I hear pinheads all over the city bragging about being stalked by girls, and what a joke, right, Beck? Like any man could ever be troubled by your interest, let alone threatened. Stalker? What bullshit. What infantilism. I turn to go, but he calls out, wait! He crawls to the cage and drops his plastic key card from his drug kit. Take it? Why? Storage locker, he says. I'm a klepto, Joe. I've got things to do. That key opens the locker, he says, desperate. The address is on the back, and nobody knows about it. I'm Stephen Crane. You're not Stephen Crane. I am to the guy who rented me the locker, he smiles. Fucking heroin. The Red Badge of Courage. That's the one book on that list that I read. Of course, that's the only book he read. Guys like Benji do all their homework in middle school, so they never have to try again. Take all of it, Joe. Sell it. Pawn it. Do it. He's whimpering, and I can imagine him at Disneyland throwing a fit about the heat. Please, Joe, there's a ton, Joe. I started stealing when I could walk. Just ask my parents. Hi, Mummy. He nods off, and he better not die. I care about him because you care about him, and I want him to die honorably, when the time is right. I don't want him to die high, pissing his pants, giving his shit away. There are two more bags that flew out of the blazer, and I have to go in and get them so he doesn't overdose while we're at IKEA. He starts to sing again. And the colored girls go do, do, do. I hit the cage with my machete. Stop.
Jojo mad.
He drools, and his words are melted butter. Like his brain. You text. You ready soon? I don't know what to say to you, and he is eyeing me, amused.
She's not worth it.
I text you. I need an hour. Work is tough. He pulls an electronic cigarette from that fucking blazer and whistles, and somehow I'm the one caged.
She's crazy, Joe.
I tell him he's high, but my voice is weak. He pulls hard on that fake cigarette, an addict to the bone. He is the storyteller, and I am the listener, and I could smash my machete into my foot, and that wouldn't change things.
Want to know about Beck?
He says, and he doesn't make me say yes.
I'll tell you about Beck. All she wants is money. A rich dude, anyone. My senior year, she showed up at my place and pretended she was a maid. I knew she wasn't the maid, obviously, but I let her in. And I didn't ask her to suck my dick, Joe. Same way I didn't ask her to scrub the toilet. But she did.
You're high, I say, but I sound even less convinced, pathetic. He cackles.
Oh shit, Joe. Of course I'm high.
I try to erase the image of you sucking his dick, and I can't. If she cares about money so much, then why is she all over me to go out today?
Today?
He laughs again. Fuck.
That's cold, Joe. She won't even give you a night?
He's a bird soaring in the cage, and Mr. Mooney was wrong. The bird that thinks it's flying really is happy. He hates you, and you love him, and everything is wrong. I'm standing, and I don't mean to be, and he's still flat on his back. Fucker. The date is today because we're going to IKEA to get her a new bed, I say, and fuck him once and for all. He stares at me. Nothing. But then he writhes like a dog in the sun and laughs.
She did the same thing to me. Rode my dick all night. Then she went off about the stupid fucking red ladle and tried to get me to go to IKEA.
I don't know about a stupid ladle, and you're texting. See you in 45, smiley face. You didn't ride my dick all night, and Benji is imitating you.
Take me to IKEA, Benji. Pretty please with red ladles on top.
He laughs and groans, and he's not imitating you anymore.
If she wants to get spanked with a ladle, she should find some creep on the internet, you know?
No matter what I do or how hard I try, I will always wind up like this, trapped by a guy who has more, knows more. I will not let him win. I unlock the cage, and he tries to escape. I kick him into the corner like the dog that he is, pick up his leftover drugs off the floor, and flush them down the toilet. I thank him for the crap in his locker, and he cries, and I feel better already. I was wrong. I am the one in charge. He may have the red ladle, but I have the key. Chapter 14. You haven't been able to wipe the shit-eating grin off your face since you put your hand on mine to insist on paying for the IKEA ferry tickets. You look prissy in white jeans I've never seen before. Jeans that tell me you're not breaking a sweat today. You're in flip-flops, and your toenails sparkle, and your hair's in a bun, and you don't have any hickeys, so there's that. You are thrilled that I am up for a jaunt, and you promise to make it fun. And you better try your damnedest, because the whole time you're talking to me, I'm just seeing your mouth as an orifice for Benji's cock, and I am thinking of the way you joked with your friends in your email. You. Joe is a go. Slave for a day. Score one for Beck. Hana. LOL. You know, you have to blow him or give him a handy. You. No, no, he's not assembling, just going with. Lynn. Do you think if you asked him, he would install my AC unit? Hana, Lynn, are you offering to blow Joe? Lynn, you're disgusting. You, nobody is blowing anybody. Trust me. We meet at the docks and kiss hello like platonic European friends or some shit. At least once we get on the boat and sit down, we are close. You wrap your arm through mine. I can't tell if you're cold or hot, and you smile. I can't believe you've never been to IKEA, you say. And I can't believe you have. Oh, I love it there, you say, and you're leaning into me more. Wait until you see it, all these little staged rooms. You just walk from one living room to another living room, and you can't leave without going through the entire store. There's something magical about it. Do I sound crazy? No, I say, and you don't. I'm the same way about the bookshop. You know, I walk around and I feel the whole world is in there. The most important stories of all time. And then downstairs, in the cage. Excuse me? Did you say the cage? Rare books, Beck. Gotta keep them safe. I guess I hear cage and I think animal. Benji's probably awake by now and the air feels good out here. It's not. It's like a casino. They keep the money in a cage. What is it about stores? Huh. You like selling stuff, and I am full-on addicted to buying stuff in the most stereotypically girly way. I love to shop. I mean, I can be in the worst mood, and I go to IKEA and come out of there with... You pause, and is this it? Red ladle, red ladle, red ladle. I come out of there with a couple of placemats, and I feel renewed. Fuck. That's good. That's a good way to feel. Maybe if I share an object with you, maybe then you'll share the ladle with me. I take the AC remote out of my pocket. And I remember fantasizing about this moment before I had you. You look at it and you don't touch it. And I tell you that you can touch it. And you take it out of my hand. You smile. This is high tech. It's the most important thing I have. It controls the humidifiers and the AC units in the cage, I say. If I were to jack up the heat and let those books get moist, they'd be gone forever. Gertrude Stein is dead and she's not coming back to life to sign books. I just got the chills, you say, and you smile. Ladle. You would be a good writer, Joe. How do you know that I'm not? I say, and you like it, and I try again. Your folks must be proud of you, getting your MFA. You're entertained, and you look out at the water, and I follow your eyes, and you're still touching me, and I wish I could kiss you to get Benji's cock out of your mouth, and you play with your hair instead of holding my hand. I don't have folks, you say. I have my mom, but she's alone. I glance around at the other IKEA fairy riders. None of them are like us. They're all talking about end tables and Swedish foods. We are special. We are falling in love. I'm sorry, I say, and I am. My dad died, you say. I'm sorry, I say, and I am. I don't know, you say, and your eyes are wet, but it could be the wind. And you know so many guys you could have asked, guys in class, guys online. You asked me. I guess sometimes I cry for no reason. Death is just so final, you know? He's gone. There's no coming back. He's gone. You wipe your eyes, and I won't let you laugh your way out of this one. When did he pass? Almost a year ago? Beck. You look at me, and I nod. And you crumble in my arms. And it looks like we're hugging. Another young couple off to IKEA to get feathers for the nest. And eat hyped up meatballs and nobody can hear you crying except for me. You try to wiggle away, but I hold you. And your big Portman eyes are glossy and your cheeks are red. And there's an old couple across the way and the dude nods at me like I'm Captain America and we're almost there. And you're wiping your eyes. I want more. I try. So what was he like? Your dad. You shrug, and I wish there were a way for me to ask about a red ladle, but it's not a normal question, and you sigh. He loved to cook. That was one good thing. I like to cook, too, I say, and I will learn how to cook. Red ladle, red ladle, red ladle. Good to know, you say, and you cross your legs. My shrink would say that I'm not respecting boundaries. You see a shrink? Dr. Nikki, you say, and I nod. Oh my God, Joe, why am I telling you this? What's wrong with me? Don't you think that's a question for Dr. Nikki? I say. You smile. I am funny. Now I understand the meaning of Angevine on Tuesdays at 3 marked in the calendar in your phone. Dr. Nikki Angevine. Bing. And I mean it when I tell you not to be embarrassed. Seriously, Beck, I say, all comforting. I think shrinks are great. Most guys don't want to know stuff, you say. Most guys would freak out at me right now. The crying and the shrinking and the shopping. You know too many guys, I say, and you smile, and you know you need me, and you nod like you agree, like you're agreeing to us, seeing the light. And the captain blows the horn. You kiss me. In the movie 500 Days of Summer, IKEA is the most romantic place on earth. Joseph Gordon-Levitt and the girl start out in one kitchen, and she's sweet on him and pretending to feed him dinner, and when the faucet doesn't work, the joke being that all the appliances are props, Joseph jumps out of his chair and walks through a doorway into another kitchen, and she is in awe of him, and he says, "That's why we bought a home with two kitchens." And I watched the clip right after you tweeted about going to IKEA, and it's not like I'm some moron who expects life to be like the movies, but it has to be said. Life at IKEA is not like life at IKEA in the movies. In real life, I am not Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I have to push a giant metal shopping cart, weaving through the masses while you point out sofas you don't need, wall units you don't have room for, and ovens that are made of cardboard. There are a million people crowding this gargantuan converted warehouse. It's a dystopian nightmare come true where all furniture is cut from the same hunk of cheap-ass wood, where all rooms were furnished with items that came out of the exact same factory at the exact same time. It smells like body odor and Febreze and baby shit and farts and meatballs and nail polish and more baby shit. Doesn't anyone get a babysitter anymore? And it is loud, Beck, and I miss half the things you say because I can't hear you over the other humans. And all the while, I am consciously not thinking about where the red ladles might be in this hellacious sprawl of new shit. In 500 Days of Summer, the chick challenges Joseph to a race from the kitchen to the bedroom, and the camera follows them as they run through an aisle. The chick flies out of the mattress, and Joseph comes next at a slow crawl. He mounts her, and she wants him. You can see it. He whispers, "Darling, I don't know how to tell you this, but there's a Chinese family in our bedroom." In real life, there is also a Chinese family in IKEA with us, but they are nothing like the quiet family in the movie. There is a small boy who screams, and a small girl who poops in a diaper and drools. It feels like they're following us, Beck, and I'm gonna lose it if they don't stop fighting. They're so fucking loud, and I can't hear what you're saying. You pick up a yellow fringed pillow, and I am sick of missing out on your words. What if you said something important? What if you revealed something to me and I missed it? You excuse yourself as you squeeze by the Chinese woman who has stopped abruptly to examine an unremarkable round table. She could get out of the way, but she doesn't. You practically have to boost yourself onto the backside of the hunk of junk they call a sofa in order to get closer to me. That woman has nerve, and I want to tell her, but you hold my hand. Maybe it's not so bad after all. "Feel this," you say. You push the pillow into my hand. I look down, and I can see your black panties just below the belt of your white jeans. They've stretched out from all your monkeying around, and you're holding my hand and breathing, and you don't smell like IKEA, and just like that, I'm hard. "It's soft, right?" "Yeah," I say. The Chinese dad slams his fist on the table. Bam! We're both startled, and the moment ends as you drop the pillow. If this were 500 Days of Summer, we wouldn't be able to hear him over the Hall & Oates that would be playing just for us. You pick up another pillow, pink. You press it into my palm. "Well, what about this one?" I'm your putty, and you've got your hair in a bun, and you're not looking at me even though you know I'm looking at you, and you smile. And you keep your eyes on my hand on the pillow, and you whisper, "I think this is good." "Me too," I murmur. I've barely been able to hear you speaking for the last couple of hours, and your voice is heaven. I missed it. You look up at me with sweet eyes.
"It just feels good, you know?"
"Yeah," I say, and it does.
You can tell when something is right, because most things are just plain wrong.
"Yeah," I say, and you have to be talking about us, not some $12 piece of Swedish chazerai. But you won't look at me. You won't let me all the way in yet, so fuck it. This is all too good, and I'm gonna break in. "Hey, Beck," I say.
"Yeah?"
you say, but your eyes are on the pillow, not me. "I like you." You smile.
"Yeah?"
"Yeah," I say. And I put my other hand on your shoulder, and now you're looking at me. We're so close that I can see the pores you're always trying to shrink, and I can see the eyebrows you didn't pluck this morning, because this morning you didn't know you were gonna want me. This morning I watched you get ready in 5 minutes flat.
"So we'll get the pillow?" you say.
"Yeah," I say, and it won't be long until I'm inside of you.
We've just made a pact, and we know it. And I don't know who grabs whose hand. I just know that we're holding hands, and you're holding the pillow, and we're weaving in and out of bedrooms, and now you're helping me. You've got a hand on the front of the cart. We are in this together, side by side, navigating like an old couple, like a new couple. And you know what, Beck? It turns out IKEA is pretty fucking awesome. You grab onto the base of something called the Hemnes bed, and you look up at me. Does this work? Yep, I say, and you nod. You want me to like your bed. You know it's gonna be our bed, and you take the little pencil out of your back pocket and scribble down the numbers and letters. You hand me the slip and smile. Sold. Some girls would take all day and go back and forth, but you are gloriously decisive, and I am crazy about you. You peck me on the cheek and tell me to have a seat on my new bed, and you skip off to the ladies' room, and maybe you pee, and maybe you don't, but you do send an email to the guy you hired off Craigslist to assemble your new shit. Hey, Brian, this is Beck from the ad. I'm so sorry, but I have to cancel today. My boyfriend got the day off, so he can do it. Sorry, Beck. Boyfriend. When you come out of the bathroom, your eyelids are a little red from the quick job you just did on your brows, and your lips are glossed, and your tits are a little higher, and you're smiling, and I almost think you rubbed one out in there, and you take a deep breath and clap your hands. So, can I buy you some meatballs? No, I say. But I can buy you some meatballs. You smile, because I'm your boyfriend. You just said so, Beck. You did. We parked the shopping cart outside of the cafe area, and the noise level in here is too much. And there's a line, but you say it's worth the wait. You were prattling on about meatballs, and that damn Chinese family is in front of us, and how did they get here first? They are taking forever, and they are ahead of us, in line and in life, married with kids. The clouds are forming in my head, because you didn't say boyfriend to a friend, just to some dude on Craigslist. What if you don't mean it? What if you were quick to pick out a bed because you looked at beds online? What if you don't care what I think? What if you're not thinking it would be nice to go to bed with me, to make a family with me? The Chinese dad is taking too long and I can't take it anymore, and I reach over his arm and grab the other meatball ladle. Ladle! He shoots me a dirty look and you apologize to him as if I'm the bad guy in the buffet line in the world, and you still haven't told me about the red ladle. You look at me. Is something wrong, Joe? They were rude. It's just crowded, you say, and you think I'm harsh, and I am. I'm sorry, I say. Your jaw drops, and your mouth opens, and then it closes, and your eyes are wide, and you are dazzled. You purr. He says he's sorry when he's wrong, and he lets me spend 2 hours looking at couches I don't need. Joe, are you for real? I beam. I am. When the Chinese mother shoves my hand out of the way to reach a napkin, I don't even react. I don't have to withhold my anger, because I'm not angry. You pick out the meatballs, and I pay. I'm your boyfriend. And you choose a table, and I follow you. We sit, at last. You know, Joe, I'm totally gonna help you put the bed together. You bet you are, Missy. You split a meatball down the middle, and pop half into your mouth, and you chomp. Mmm. Now it's my turn. And you pick up the other half, and I open my mouth. I'm your seal. Open. And you pop the half ball into my mouth and I chomp. Mmm. The Chinese family interrupts again when the boy rams a spatula into the white table, which reminds me that you still haven't told me about the red ladle, and suddenly these meatballs taste like shit. You told Benji about the ladle, why not me? Are you okay, Joe? Yeah, I lie. Just realized I gotta take care of some online orders at the shop. Well, that's actually good, you say. I can shower and clean up and you can come over when you're done. Everything about what you just said is ideal, but you still haven't mentioned the red ladle, and for all I know, you never will. I take charge. I just gotta pick up something. Really? You say, like it's so hard to believe. What do you need? I can't say ladle. A spatula? A spatula for Joe, you say. Sounds like a kid's book or something. The Chinese family sails past us, hightailing it to their next destination in this plastic zoo. You look longingly at them and their full cart, and we're on the move again. I search the signs for cooking utensils, and you sigh. I'm beat. Just gotta get the spatula, and then we're out of here. You're done, lazy. I can stay here with the cart. Do you mind coming? I say. The last one I got was a piece of shit. You follow me into cooking utensils,
and I walk slowly and hope that the spatulas will be right next to the ladles. I see red ladles, and my heart leaps. You don't react to them. You need a push. I pick one up. Maybe I'll get all red things, I say. Is that lame? You look at the red ladle.
This is really weird.
What? And now, at last, you pet the red ladle in my hand and tell me the story of your red ladle. You were a little girl in a little bed, and the smell of pancakes woke you up on Sunday mornings. Your dad used a special red ladle on Sundays, just Sundays. He would sing along to the Top 40 countdown, screw up the lyrics, and make you and your brother and your sister laugh, winter, spring, summer, fall, and you couldn't fall asleep Saturday nights. You were so excited for Sunday mornings. And then he started hitting the bottle, and the Sundays went away. And the red ladle stayed in a drawer, and your mother's pancakes were greasy and burnt or wet and undercooked, and your father was gone. But the ladle was still there. And bad pancakes smell like good pancakes, and he's dead now, so there will never be pancakes again. There's nothing dirty about your sweet, sad story, and fuck Benji for making you feel bad. That ladle is still in our house to this day, as if he's coming, you say. Life is mean. I put my hands on your shoulders, and you look at me, expectant. I speak. I'm getting this for you. Joe. No ifs, ands, or buts. The world stops, and your eyes gloss over. The Benjis of the world don't understand what you want, someone to make you pancakes. You don't care about money. You don't want to be spanked. You want love. Your father had a red ladle, and now I have a red ladle, and I will make you the pancakes you want so badly, the pancakes you haven't tasted since he died. Your mouth waters, and you submit softly.
Okay, Joe.
You pick up a silver ladle. Fresh start, you say, and you are right. I am your boyfriend. Chapter 15. I cross 7th Avenue and smile at every single person who passes by. I am happy. I don't even think I'm walking right now. It's just a dream. And if I started to sing and dance, I wouldn't be surprised if all the strangers got in line and followed along. What a magical day with you. And now to think of you in your place, showering and shaving those legs so they're nice and smooth for me, brushing the meatball gristle out of your fine little teeth. I can't wait to touch all of you. And I am carefree as a guy in a beer commercial as I make my way down Bank Street. It's actually possible that we can have sex tonight, and I really didn't think we would get here this fast, but Benji is still out cold, and I put a $20 salad and a bottle of home soda in the drawer for him, so he'll be fine for hours. I am free, and I am literally walking up the stairs to your stoop and pressing the buzzer and waiting for you to come jogging to the door, which you do. Entrevue! You giggle, and I walk into your lobby, and it's happening. We're gonna fuck. Your hair is damp, and your pores are gone, and there's no bra under that tank top, and there are no panties under those low-slung, threadbare sweatpants, and you're not wearing any socks. I'm kind of a slob, you say as you open the door, and I want to tell you that I know, but I don't. That isn't so bad, I say, and I'm not sure where to go. It's an awkward space with you in it, and it's so small that it really is meant for one. You stand in front of me, with your hands on your hips, looking around at all the girl stuff strewn about, magazines and matchbooks, empty vitamin water bottles and coupons and receipts, brand new books, unread, mixed with beloved books, torn and frayed. It's a minefield of shit, and maybe that's why you're just staring at all of it. There's a galley kitchen ahead to the left, and there's a new toaster and the box from the new toaster on the floor, and you really do like new things. The bathroom door is to the direct left, and the light is on, and the fan is blowing, and I reach in and turn off the switch. It was a strange thing to do, and I know it, and you were freaked out, but thank God you like me, so you make a joke of it and laugh. Well, yes, Joe, go ahead and make yourself at home, you say, and you make your way across the minefield, past the TV, and into the bedroom. I take off my jacket and hang it on the standing coat rack. You turn around and scrunch your pretty little nose at me. Get in here, you say. Yes, miss, I say, and I step on a fucking hanger and it snaps, but I just keep going. Your room. There's a bottle of vodka on the floor, two brand new glasses, not IKEA, and a paper cup of ice that you pick up and show to me. Pretty ghetto, right? You laugh? Nah, ghetto would be if it was in a paper towel. You giggle and pour ice and vodka into both cups and sit down on the floor by the box of bed. There is music on. The Bowie from our date. And you pat the floor and I sit down across from you. Someday, I'll be the kind of girl who always has mixers in the fridge, you say. Good to have goals. You smile at me and get on your knees and move closer to me and I lean forward to meet you. And when I take my glass, I very deliberately feel your hand against mine. Thanks. No problem, you murmur, and somehow, like a ballerina, like a pretzel, your legs relax and spread, and you are sitting like a yogi with your bare feet pressed together. You sip your vodka and look up at the ceiling. I hate all those marks. No, Beck, this is an old building. Those marks are the history. When I was a kid, I wanted glass box walls. You know those frosted glass boxes, like from the 80s? You like new things, I say. You were quick to come back. You like old things, Joe. I like it here, I say, and I look around the room. It's smaller than I remember, or maybe it's just hot. I want you. You think your new bed is going to fit in here? I had a queen before. You're wrong, because your old bed was a double and it barely fit, but I can't correct you. You lick your lips. So, can I be your assistant? No, I say, but you can be my apprentice. I always say the right thing to you, and it was like that right off the bat. You like words, and I know words, and we toast for no reason and throw back our drinks, and I stand first. I offer a hand to help you up, and I'm holding one of your hands, and now both of your hands. This time you're not letting go, and I'm getting hard, and you've got me with my back against your window, and I can hear leaves rustle on trees. Cars swish up West 4th, right through my gut. My senses, Beck, you turn me on, literally, and the wind nips at my back through the screen on the window. You take my hands, and you slide them onto your hips, guiding. You maneuver my fingers, one by one, beneath the elastic waist of your threadbare sweatpants, and anyone outside walking by could see us. And you bring my hands lower. Your butt is soft and yet hard and round, and I'm cupping your ass, and you let go of my hands and reach up and wrap them around my head, and it's on. You leap up and straddle me, and I could walk from here to China with you wrapped around me, and I walk across the tiny room, and I have you against the wall. And I'm kissing you and owning your ass, and I like your heels in my back, and your bed in a box. And there's a horrible sound at the door. Metal on metal, and a whistle, and your legs drop to the floor, and you straighten my hair, and there's someone at the door. Is your mom here? I say, and you lick your hand and tame my eyebrow. Nope, you say. It's Peach. So it's like that. And you slide away. This is all wrong, and this was our time. And you run to the door and let Peach inside, and I can't hear you, but I sure can hear her. What is wrong with your hair? You say something. She balks. You're not fucking the assemblyman from Craigslist. You say something again. She groans. Beck, dessert is supposed to come after dinner. What are you thinking when he hasn't even built your bed? Now you are loud and clear. Joe! I come when I am called, and I nod hello to Peach, and she fakes a smile. Hi, Joseph, she says. Sorry to crash your party, but our little friend here had originally hired someone to make her bed, and as her best friend, it was my duty to join just in case the worker was a lunatic. Well, surprise, I exclaim, and you laugh, but Peach doesn't, and man, that vodka was strong. She looks at you. Can I pee? Of course, you say. Are you having a flare? I am, she says, and she kicks off her sneakers, and the smell of her self-indulgent, sweaty feet overwhelms the apartment, and now she pulls her hot pink fleece over her birdie little head and throws it on the floor, not on the coat rack. She looks at me. Joseph, she says, I know this is more than you want to know, but I have a rare condition with my bladder called interstitial cystitis, and when I have to pee, I have to pee. Be my guest, I say. and she stomps into the tiny bathroom when she doesn't turn on the light. She knows your place. She knows that if she turns on the light, the fan will come on and she won't be able to hear us. She doesn't trust us, but she probably doesn't trust anyone. I crack up a little, but you shh me and motion for me to follow you into the bedroom, and you are different now.
I'm so sorry, Joseph.
You slip.
Joe.
That's okay. Is she all right?
Have you ever heard of IC?
I what?
Interstitial cystitis, you say, and you are all best friend business now,
tying your hair back with an elastic band and opening a scissor and tearing into the box. I take the scissor and finish the job, and you pour more vodka for you, not me, and we're not having sex, and you're not my apprentice anymore. Instead, I am hauling the bed for